Your host for today, Jeff Pickle.
No, there ain't nothing that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black.
Good morning and welcome to the Jennifer Campbell Show. I am Jeff Pickle filling in today and for the next several days for Jennifer as she is off in the UK covering the royal wedding. We are actually going to hear from Jennifer a little later on, around 9:30. She's going to phone in, taking a little break from her time covering the royal wedding, and let us know exactly what's going on the busy streets of London, England, as they prepare for the mayhem that is a royal wedding. Presumably the last significant royal wedding for the next, I don't know, fingers crossed, 20 years or so. I think that should give us enough time to recuperate and get over this one, depending what side of the fence you sit on as far as the exorbitant amount of coverage that a wedding is going to get. But we are going to hear from Jennifer about everything going on there. It is a crazy scene there in London, England, and in Windsor, where the wedding is going to take place, I guess, tomorrow morning. It's going to be going on. We're going to have a lot of coverage in the next day or two about that. So keep it tuned. Right around 9:30, we're going to hear from Jennifer. And thanks so much for listening. If you're tuning in here on 570 News, and of course those watching on Rogers Cable 20, thanks so much for tuning in as well. Heck of a show planned for you today. This beautiful Friday before a long weekend. Something extra special about that Friday before a long weekend. Nothing can go wrong on a Friday before a long weekend. Probably just jinxed myself there, but what an amazing feeling that is, especially when you start at 4 a.m. and your quitting time is right now within a grasp. I can see it. I can taste it. I'm going to be out of here pretty darn soon, but not before we have this great show for you. We are going to do a little bit of election talk, election coverage at 9:15. We're going to talk about some issues there. How could we not? 20 days away from Ontario's election. And right at the end, we might talk a little hockey playoffs with none other than James Sebastian Scott. But first off, a topic that, as I said, it's going to be a good day for me if I get to fill in on the show and I get to talk a little bit about rugby. I'm a lifelong rugby player. I think in my 15th year now playing rugby. Still played. Actually had a game last night. A little bit sore and battered from that. And it's the most terrific sport in the world. The most terrific sport you can ever play. And there's some big things happening in Ontario, in Canada, closer to home in Toronto, when it comes to the development of rugby, and specifically professional rugby. The Ontario Rugby, the Ontario Arrows, rather, are a short-term experiment with a long-term goal of making a big impact on rugby in Canada. The team is going through a bit of a test run this year, and they'll officially expire at the end of the month, but the team's management is hopeful that the Arrows will return permanently in 2019. The goal is to see the Toronto-based team become the first Canadian member of a new professional rugby league based in the United States. That's the Major League Rugby. It's essentially what MLS is for North American soccer. The MLR is well on its way to being for North American rugby. It used to be that standout rugby players in Canada and the United States had to pack their bags and head to Europe if they wanted to play high-level rugby, professional rugby, which not that many can do. But now players can stay a bit closer to home, and hopefully with the successful possible launch of this team in next year's league, players in Ontario won't have to travel far at all. I'm happy to be joined by the general manager of the Ontario Arrows, Mark Whitaker. Mark, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Jeff. I didn't realize you were this well-spoken when you were out with us a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, I was a little shy at times and, you know, tried to keep it to myself. But once in a while, I can find a few words put together. Mark is the general manager of this Ontario Arrows team, but also in previous years, before getting into this more, you know, kind of professional vein, Mark was the general manager of the Ontario Blues, which is the Ontario Selects team, and I was able to come out and enjoy some practices and a few exhibition games with those. So Mark and I are familiar with each other, and I've met his team on the field a few times and over the years, which is great because the Ontario rugby community really is that. It is a community where, you know, a lot of people know each other if you've been playing for a couple of years.
And, you know, what we're really trying to do is to plug into that in the early stages and get, engage them in this professional process so we can see if it's going to be a commercial success. I think on the field, we probably are pretty happy with where we are already. And now it's really down to, you know, we got to make sure all the money lines up before you write a big check.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, yeah, let's talk about this. So I think that kind of gave a fairly good example comparing the MLR, the Major League Rugby, to MLS and what we've seen, you know, the growth of that league over the last 10 years. And it is just giving, you know, some homegrown players a real chance to play, you know, high level, get paid some money to play some rugby, which really you haven't been able to do on North American soil before the last, you know, couple of years.
Yeah, and I mean, we're really tagging on to what MLR has done. You know, they're able to pay some decent salaries to guys to play. We're not there yet. We're just looking after sort of match day per diems and that kind of thing. But, you know, we have been able to provide a more professional training environment, more training sessions, better coaching, strength and conditioning, video analysis, diet, all those kinds of things that go into a professional franchise. So, you know, we've been able to put those pieces in place, and it's really made a difference in the guys' ability to play the game.
And so, you know, describing this as kind of a test run year, you know, as described as a research and development year, you guys have been playing some teams either in the MLR or teams that are kind of in that you know, some highly elite level teams that are, you know, at least close to that level to kind of gauge how you would kind of be able to function, you know, if you were able to, as you said, write that check and try to join the league.
Correct. Yeah, we played in Houston before about 3,000 fans in March. We played at Rio Tinto Stadium in Salt Lake City, Utah, in early April. 5,000 people at that one. We tied the first one and won the second one. So those are two current MLR teams playing in front of big hostile crowds. And as you know, Jeff, you know, we're not able to train outside in the winter, so we were well behind the preparation curve. So we think on the field we've proven that point. We played a couple of games against Boston, who are similar to us, kind of looking at the opportunity, perhaps not as well developed, and a game in New York as well. And then we wind up with home and home with Canada starting tonight at York Lions Stadium at 7 p.m.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to get to some of that, that other, you know, the business side of things as well. But the one thing that, you know, currently I've had a great amount of joy, you know, seeing when I've been following on Twitter and on Instagram and seeing those rosters come up. And, you know, it's local guys. It's people that I, you know, played against last year. And it's people that, you know, guys from, you know, Brantford. There's guys in the team right. From, you know, a lot of, I think there's some guys from London. I think there's a player who had played at Wilfrid Laurier University the last year. This is, in, you know, very much a sense, a very locally, you know, driven team.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, the theory always was, and you know this, Jeff, from having been around us, that we've got some very, very good rugby players in Ontario that are overlooked by the national team, that are, you know, overlooked by the pro teams. And we thought that by putting them in a more professional environment, we'd get their development curve, you know, going upwards at a rate of speed, and it has done. And, you know, we're sticking to that theory. We did sign that, we did see that the New York team signed Ben Foden yesterday from the English Premiership. That's not the road we're going. This is a team by and for Canadians. We've got a couple of you know, foreign, in italics, players with us, but for the most part, this is good Ontario boys who come through the system.
Yeah, no, it's really cool to see. And so the you know, the rugby side, the on-field product side has seemingly gone very well. And now, you know, I know you guys ran into some trouble there when the big game that you promoted against the Boston team was the same weekend that there was some inclement weather and prevented that happening. So, you know, all the marketing kind of put into that, you know, didn't quite, you know, get to see what it may have if it had stuck around that weekend. But right now you're trying to see, you know, the rugby, the talent level, the on-field products there, you're trying to see what the appetite is from the public.
Correct. And you know, that was a shame to lose that weekend to the ice storm. I mean, there's nothing anybody could have done about that. You know, the storm was worse than forecasted, and you know, that's life. We have managed to replace it on the home schedule with this game tonight against Canada at York. We're playing in the new stadium. We think we'll get a good crowd. We had a very enthusiastic crowd of 1,604 for the last game against Boston. Great atmosphere for us, and we think we'll do considerably better than that tonight. And, you know, then we'll be able to sit back and say, okay, guys, you know, let's look at the numbers and let's see if we can make this work.
And have you got an indication? I know you do, there's you know, one major corporate backer, but there's some other you know, investors as well looking into this. Have they gave you an indication of what they, you know, might want to see as far as, you know, numbers go? I do have some sympathy for you there, because it's kind of a difficult thing that, you know, it's once it's permanent, I'm sure the followings would come. So it's kind of in a precarious situation for you. But do you have any kind of indication of what they want to see before they're willing to, you know, take that next step, as you said?
Yeah, well, it's not just us. I mean, I think, you know, we'll get a good crowd tonight. I'm very confident of that. And you know, we'll be able to say, okay, yes, the market will support it. We're also looking at the league. The league has some very, very promising signs in places like Seattle and Utah and Houston. There's some of the other cities, you know, are not as have not been as successful out of the gate. So, you know, there's a little bit of not tire kicking, but being very circumspect about our due diligence on both sides, on our own side and on the other side. You know, obviously we want to make this happen. We did not pour. I certainly did not pour, you know, 40 hours a week for the last 6 months into this for no reason. But, you know, we do want to make sure that the whole thing has a chance to continue to build before we you know, we jump in with both feet.
No, absolutely. And that makes a lot of sense. You know, and the other thing I look at this is, as I kind of mentioned in my little preamble there, is, you know, rugby's not it's not hockey. It's not as big a sport as certainly some others in the country. So maybe some people aren't, you know, don't follow along quite as well. But Canada rugby as a whole has seen some high points and some kind of lower points. And for people who follow maybe the standings in the national men's team, it's at a little bit of a low point right now. What do you think a team like this, like a professional team allowing some players like that, what would that mean for, you know, the Canadian rugby, you know, as a whole?
Well, yeah, and to be fair, you know, Kingsley Jones, who's the new national team coach, has been extremely supportive of this. He realizes that this is an opportunity for him to broaden his player base. This game that we're playing tonight and next week came about, you know, sitting in a restaurant just discussing how can we help each other build out the player base, and this is what we came up with in the near term. So, listen, you know, does he want his players going to a second-tier team in Europe and sitting on the bench? Perhaps not. Does he want them playing in a North American league where he's got access to them, full line of sight into them, and a chance to you know, give input on a weekly basis, perhaps better. So it's in his best interest to make it happen, and Rugby Canada's, and they've been supportive too. They have no financial skin in this game, but certainly from a player development standpoint, they've been very supportive.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I look at, you know, the kind of the gains made south of the border as far as American rugby goes, which, you know, typically in the last, you know, whatever time frame you want to put it, 20 years has been a little bit behind, Canada has certainly made up a lot of ground there. And the only thing that I can see has changed is they have, you know, six now pro teams, and that's, you know, the development they'll be able to kind of gather from that as being, you know, one thing that I see is, hey, why are all of a sudden Canadian teams, national teams, getting surpassed by an American team? And that's, you know, one of the things that I would look at as being a reason why.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at other sort of tier two nations that we compete with, you know, Romania now has a pro league. Russia now has a pro league. Spain now has a pro league. And we don't, you know, we're on the cusp of, but that's, if anybody really wants to, you know, people are, oh, we're going to get rid of this coach and we got to change that manager. No, what we need to do is to change the system and to catch up with what the rest of the world are doing. And then you'll see that we'll regain our traction and get back to where we should be.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark, yeah, I know you know and I know well that the passion's there for guys like, you know, myself, Weekend Warriors, who, you know, pay money to go get ourselves, you know, beat up and travel around because it is such a passion game. So the passion's there. It's just, yeah, like you said, a little bit of a restructuring of the way things go to see that top level be affected. Mark, so there's the game tonight against the Canada Selects. Can you give us a little info if anyone's listening wants to catch one of the next two games?
Yeah, we're at York Lions Stadium, which is the brand new Pan Am Stadium on the York campus tonight, 7 p.m. kickoff. It's $15 online, OntarioArrowsRugby.com, and it's $20 at the gate. Under 16 are free admission. And then next week we play in the Center of Excellence in Langford, West Hills Stadium, Langford, B.C. That's a 5 p.m. Pacific, so 8 p.m. Eastern kickoff against Canada Selects next Saturday, the 26th.
Okay, excellent stuff, Mark. Thanks so much, and best of luck with things moving forward.
You bet. Thanks, Jeff. Hope to see you soon.
Yeah, no problem. All right. Thanks again there. That was Mark Winokur. He is the general manager for the Ontario Arrows, and you can tell there it's a passion of mine, and it's amazing to see. You know, this has been something people in rugby circles have wanted to see so much, to grow, you know, the base, to have, you know, to have an opportunity for really good players who maybe don't want to make the commitment to, as Mark said, move to Europe and play on a tier two team, and, you know, it'd be a really tough goal. There's a chance for players to be at home, to grow at home, and kind of build, as we said, that national program. Canada at its peak was around, you know, a top 10 nation in the world at rugby not that long ago, and really has kind of been surpassed a little bit in the last couple of years. And as Mark said, a large part of that is because of the fact that, you know, the pro team, that talent base isn't able to grow as quickly as these other countries have. And there's some amazing Canadian players. If you want to look up Tyler Ardron, a guy, he played at McMaster University, played against him, and he plays in the top pro league. He's playing in New Zealand right now and doing quite well, and it's amazing to see where some of those guys go. And I said, it's such a small community that you know, I'm able to have been played against a lot of these top very top guys, and have got my bell rung by them many times. So it's great to see, and I was, as you can tell, pretty happy to talk about rugby. So the Ontario Arrows, keep that name in mind looking forward. If you're looking for some elite level rugby action, not too far away in the not too distant future. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with the Jennifer Campbell Show right after this.
Your 2018 Ontario election updates and analysis happen here.
570 News and at 570news.com.
I guess I ran myself a little bit late there. Got carried away talking about rugby. My plan was to do a little bit more election discussion. I was going to open up the phone lines. I wanted to hear. I was talking this morning on 570 News about a new Ipsos poll that, if you're listening to Glenn Peltier yesterday, fill in for Mike Farwell, talk about this poll that shows the Conservatives holding on to a 40% vote share, the Liberals slipping back a couple percentage down to about 22%, and then the surprise being the NDP. Well, maybe I shouldn't say surprise, but certainly the big mover was the NDP surging ahead 6 percentage points to a 35% vote share. And, you know, one of the reasons, if you were listening in yesterday or this morning to my analysis, or not, that's probably not the best word of it, my report on those findings, was that because the NDP are owning healthcare right now. All the other, the top four other issues being worries about the deficit, worries about taxation, some of those more financial concerns are all owned by the PCs. But the NDP are owning healthcare, which is really, I guess, according to the polling, proving to be a pretty decisive issue, obviously. And it's resonated well with voters. So NDP are moving up in their polls as the Conservatives hold on. But certainly it will be an exciting race. And honestly, I've said it before on this show that, we get a lot of election coverage, seeing as we're 3 weeks away from an election. So I'm not too upset if I run out of time and I'm not able to chat about it. I am quite positive it will come up sometime in the next 4 hours as Mike Farwell takes over the show. Although maybe he's got that Friday feeling like me and just wants one day to avoid it. We'll see when he comes on the show. But up next, we're going to have Jennifer Campbell. Yes, that Jennifer Campbell, the one who this very show was named after, she's going to be my guest. I'm going to be interviewing the one and only Jennifer Campbell, and it's going to be a lot of fun doing so as she's in England, giving us a call, racking up her long-distance charges, as I'm sure. We're going to chat with her right after the break, but we're going to go to some news, and we'll be back with that in a moment.
Put the smart in your smartphone. Download the 570 News app and stay informed. 570 News.
Some very fitting music. Welcome back to the Jennifer Campbell Show. Our next guest needs no introduction. The one who this very show was named after. Joining us from the most royal place in the world, the one and only Jennifer Campbell. Jennifer, how are you doing?
Hi, good morning. I'm so good. Very busy and very excited, and getting my final fascinator fitting happening underway here.
Your final, pardon me, what was that?
The fascinator. You know, the fancy little foo-foo hat. They all wear at the wedding tomorrow.
Correct. Okay, and is that a real thing that you're getting one? You're getting fitted?
Well, I mean, it doesn't pain me to admit. I mean, it's no secret that I'm a royal fan. So I already had one. I brought mine with me from Will and Kate's wedding, which I just watched on television. I brought that one with me because those little suckers are expensive.
Yeah, I can imagine. Mm-hmm. You don't buy one each wedding. You buy one and it's with you for life.
Well, a commoner like myself would certainly wear the same one. Anyone of elite royal blood would have a different one for every day of the week.
Yes, such a functional hat too that it's good for almost any occasion.
So I should really wear it to work sometimes.
I think I'm surprised you haven't. I'm surprised I haven't seen it. So it's been a busy whirlwind couple of days. What have your days been filled with so far?
Well, so far just arriving and kind of getting the lay of the land and kind of talking to people about the mood, which is celebratory and excited for some people. And some people say, it's just another day, as it is all over the world. Some people are staunch royal watchers and monarchists, and some people are just kind of waiting for the weekend to be over with. But that being said, 8,800 street parties will happen tomorrow all across the UK. So there are a fair amount of people who are very excited for this wedding.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a bit of an understatement, as I imagine. Give me a sense of the atmosphere. I know you're just kind of getting settled in, and you said there is a bit of a divide between the street partying crew who will be out there and the people who are just trying to go about the business. But I guess can you kind of sense, is there that buzz in the air?
Absolutely. For sure, there's a buzz in the air. The royal bunting is all out and on display, and London knows they'll be welcoming people, and Windsor, the UK, know that people from all over the world will be coming, and they're putting their best foot forward, as usual. It's really interesting to me that here in England, the British media is obsessed with Jessica Mulrooney. Jessica Mulrooney, I guess the closest thing we have to Canadian royalty. She's married to Ben Mulrooney. She is a fashion icon. She dresses Sophie Gregoire Trudeau. And she also became really good friends with Meghan Markle during the filming of Suits in Toronto for those years. So she has arrived with her three young children and her husband. Of course, those three kids are going to be part of the wedding party. But Jessica, there's like three-page spreads in the newspapers about Jessica Mulrooney, her connection to the Royals and what she's all about in Canada. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, and that is unique because she's not, you know, I mean, depending on, I suppose, what magazines you read and such, you might not know, like per se me, who she is. So it's kind of, it is interesting that, she has gained such a following over there, considering she might be slightly overlooked here in her home country.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm very good friends with Meghan Markle. The Mulrooney children call Meghan Auntie Meghan, and they had a hand, the Mulrooneys, in kind of being that secretive meeting spot for Meghan and for Harry when they were meeting up in Toronto. Of course, Meghan living in Toronto for years to film Suits. So they kind of have a lot of intel into the whole relationship between Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. And Meghan Markle's social media accounts obviously have been long deleted. But Jessica Mulrooney is a force and fierce on Instagram. So sometimes you can go back far enough and find some pictures of them cavorting on the beaches of Italy and sharing a little piece of their friendship.
Yeah, must be nice. It is cool. It is cool with the Canadian connection there. And when I saw I knew from reading in the past there was, a Mulrooney connection some way, but then seeing that their names in there, as you said, as the Page Boys, is certainly a pretty cool little twist of Canadianity in the middle of, you know, such an overwhelming Britannica moment.
Yeah, it is. It's funny, I've been called American twice since I've been here, and very apologetically I was like, I'm Canadian.
Yeah.
And they were very happy to hear that. They were certainly, out of their way, a little bit more kinder to Canadians. We know that from traveling already, that Canadians are welcomed just about anywhere you go in the world. But certainly I've had a little taste of that myself today.
No, that's great. And that's good to hear. That's absolutely right. The travel advice you always get is keep that Canadian pin on somewhere or something like that. So today, I guess you're a little obviously ahead of us there. And then leading into the big day tomorrow, maybe you can take us through that, what your day is going to be like tomorrow, what you'll be assigned with. Because it's not the vacation part of your trip. It hasn't started yet. You're very much there working. What's the tomorrow, the big day, going to be like for you?
Well, so tomorrow I will be, remember, the wedding is in Windsor, at Windsor Castle, and Windsor Castle is about 45 minutes from London. That's the castle Prince Charles and Camilla had a kind of a ceremony at. They weren't married there because of all of the interesting rules regarding second marriages and such at the time. But the last wedding we saw at Windsor Castle was actually one of the Phillips sons, who is the Queen's grandson, and he married a Canadian, Autumn, her name is. So that's the last royal wedding that happened there. So it's 45 minutes from London. I'll be on the streets of London taking part in one of those 8,800 street parties, and at the Hyde Park, Buckingham Palace, going back and forth and getting the mood and the vibe on the street here in London. So in Windsor, about 3,000 guests have been invited to the lawn. So those will be people who will watch the royal couple arrive. 600 guests will be inside the St. George's Chapel watching the wedding. And then after the wedding, two receptions, one formal one held by the Queen, where things are still pretty staunch and pretty traditional. And then later on, that guest list is whittled down to about 150 people to have a, actual wedding reception party with music, with dancing, with one can only assume very expensive shots at the bar. Meghan Markle has two wedding dresses. Of course, they're very secretive about the dress. Jessica Mulrooney had a big hand in that dress, but it will be a British designer. We're pretty sure about that. As Kate wore, the Duchess of Cambridge, she wore Alexander McQueen in 2011, so it probably won't be that label, but it will be British. And then that'll be traditional. That first dress will be very traditional, probably quite modest. And then, as Kate Middleton did, Meghan Markle will switch into a different dress for the parties later on that night. Less traditional, more of a North American kind of bridal vibe.
That's funny. That's kind of a cool, that's kind of probably a good way of looking at this wedding, as on one hand, so very formal, and on the other hand, kind of, breaking with that tradition as well, and being very much a modern wedding and is many, definitions as it could be. So that's, it is kind of a unique way to look at it and think of it, even as far as the dresses and the receptions go.
Yeah, there is much tradition. There is much royal ness involved. But of course, we've got a lot of Hollywood here too. Remember, yeah. The Spice Girls will be at this wedding. David Beckham will be at this wedding. Elton John has taken time off from his tour to be at this wedding. Also, here's a fun little tidbit. Three of Harry's ex-girlfriends also invited to the wedding.
Oh boy. Isn't that...
I mean,
I think we're both probably going to say the same thing. Isn't that a no-no? Isn't that, like, what's going on there?
Well, the thing is, they're a very elite, royal tie. I think that one of them is a lady, their mother's the Duchess, so they've been in the royal circle for a long, long time. Leaving them off the guest list would look, like it was being kind of, silly or petty, so they're on the guest list, but I can only imagine Meghan Markle walking up that aisle with a little bit of a smile on her face, like, sorry, girls, but... I got this one.
Doesn't matter who, I guess it's even kind of funny thinking about all the controversy that's been around her dad, but she could, it doesn't matter who your dad is. She's the one taking home the prize. So,
it's interesting too. I just want to tell you about that a little bit. Thomas Markle, a lot more sympathy here from the British media than the stories we've been hearing in North America. I read an interesting piece that said the monarchy had failed Thomas Markle. We know he's a private person. We know he lives in Mexico, very reclusive and doesn't like a lot of attention. And the paparazzi had been chasing him for months and months. And finally, he tries to give them a little bit of what they want. And then that kind of blows up in his face.
Yeah.
The media here says that the monarchy failed him, that they probably should have brought him over, gave him some coaching, gave him some kindness, introduced him to people in the royal family earlier so that it wasn't such a whirlwind of, stress and the paparazzi's eyes all over him.
Yeah, no, and I can see that. And I think some of that sympathy is starting to come around here as well. But yeah, I feel bad for the guy. I mean, it's been a terrible ordeal for him. But I suppose at least the hyper... excessive attention will be over soon, but that is an interesting note, and I guess altogether not that surprising, because I know there is it's not hard to get people riled up against the royal family in the UK as easy it is to get them riled up in favor of them as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I think what the interest that has happened with Meghan Markle's half-sisters and half-brothers and perhaps some of the family members of hers that have spoken out, against her in some way. It's just reflective of kind of because we see ourselves in that. We all have a family member or two who we kind of think, oh gosh, what is Uncle so-and-so going to say? What is he going to do? You can't pick your family. And Meghan has severed ties with some of those people long, long ago. But of course, that's being highlighted and that's definitely being brought into the forefront. But again, I think most of us, if we really are honest with ourselves, can kind of find a glimmer of, oh, yeah, I get it. Cousin so-and-so, never, never a dull moment.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that certainly kind of, shone out to me as being kind of one of those surreal kind of things. Like it's kind of, I guess, unusual enough being an American woman and being, and all the things that go along with the breaking of tradition so far. But then thinking of today, I heard that the Queen and Meghan's mother were going to meet. And like, if you think it's a bizarre situation for Meghan Markle to be in, think about all of a sudden now, her mother now meeting with the Queen and thinking these are the two, while the grandmother and the mother of the bride, and just it's like that's such a bizarre situation for her mother.
It surely is. I mean, it has to be. Nobody could have seen something like this coming. But also, when I think about it, think about being the Queen for a moment. This is an interesting kind of thought to me. The Queen is the Queen because her uncle had to abdicate the throne, had to give up the crown to marry an American divorcee. That's why Queen Elizabeth is the Queen. And now to watch her grandson marry an American divorcee. I mean, look how far that evolution of acceptance has come during the reign of Queen Elizabeth II.
Oh, absolutely, Jen. It is amazing, and obviously an amazing opportunity for you to be there. And you were describing, obviously there's the coverage is kind of split between Windsor and London. And from the sounds of it, I think you got the better assignment. Although obviously it would be cool to be in Windsor, I think the better of the two assignments is the one you landed.
Yeah, I wondered, the security is going to be certainly tight in Windsor, and getting in and out is going to be probably a day-long event. So I'm excited to join many of the monarchist and royal family watchers in Hyde Park and at Buckingham Palace and kind of enjoy that day.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we'll be following along your Twitter at JenCampbell77, Jen with two N's. We'll be, I see some, a lot of royalty-related tweets already up there. We can follow along with that, and you'll be doing some reporting as well if we want to follow along with you. Otherwise, if we don't do so, Twitter, is there any other way we can kind of see what you're up to?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can see me on Instagram at Radio Jenny, RadioJenni. And I will be posting to our sister station's Facebook page as well, country1067.com. We'll take you over there.
Perfect. Awesome. Thanks so much, Jen. Enjoy your trip. I can't wait to hear about all this and then all the rest of the traveling you're going to do when you get back. But obviously, land yourself a pretty amazing assignment.
Thank you so much. I should mention too, from our sister station from Chime, Adele Newton's going to do some reports on 570 News as the wedding takes place. She is in Windsor, and she'll be there tomorrow bringing you the best of it from Windsor.
Yeah, absolutely. Some good team coverage from reporters. Well, not typically reporters, but now reporters right on there in the scene in both London and Windsor. Awesome, Jen. Thanks again so much for taking the time to join me.
Thank you for covering for me while I get to do this job. So kind of you. Thank you.
My pleasure. All right, that was the one and only Jennifer Campbell taking the time to join us from London, England. What an awesome job she has. That's going to be so cool. I can't wait to kind of follow along and see what's going on there the rest of her trip. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, you know, I'm kind of flipping a coin between what I want to talk about now. So it will be a little bit of a dealer's choice here when we come back. I see a new study that I think might pique your interest. And also, I just like talking hockey. So it's going to be one of the two when we come back right after this.
Take flight with Canada's team.
I want to fly.
Follow the Toronto Blue Jays through all 162.
That's way out of here.
Every walk-off hit, every game-saving catch, every heart-pounding strikeout. 570 News, your home for Toronto Blue Jays baseball.
Welcome back to the Jennifer Campbell Show. Thanks again to the one and only Jennifer Campbell for joining us all the way from London, England. What an exciting time that will be for Jennifer and all those taking part in the royal wedding and celebrations involved with that. Also, Mark Whitaker, the general manager of the Ontario Arrows Rugby Club. Some exciting things going on for rugby in Ontario, in Canada. The idea of a professional team in a professional league, much like MLS, is certainly a thing that many fans of rugby in Ontario and in Canada I'll be glad to hear about. So very cool about that. So I flipped the coin, and it was either going to be a little hockey discussion or this other study survey that I found. And I know it's, not exactly, it's a bit frowned upon for me to be switching up topics on you in the last moment. But I know this
it
would
happens
be...
happens sometimes.
It happens sometimes. And I knew this would be one that you would like and that you and I could both talk about. It's a study here, I found this in Global News, saying that the title is Sorry City Dwellers, Canadians Are Happier Living in Small Towns. So this report was put together by McGill University and the Vancouver School of Economics. It took a look at about 400,000 responses in the Canadian Community Health Survey. They looked at people who live in about 1,200 communities across the country. And they looked out to find which ones were the happiest and the least happiest. And what they found were that life was significantly less happy in urban areas. Specifically, they found that the population in the least happy communities was more than 8 times higher than the ones in the happiest communities. So basically, the bigger the city, the less happy you are, and that small towns, for maybe their lack of other attractions and entertainment, you live a very happy life. James Sebastian Scott, what are your thoughts on this?
I think it's true. I grew up in a small town just outside of Winnipeg. So, I rode a dirt bike everywhere I went. I rode a snowmobile everywhere I went during the winter. how could you not be happy on those two modes of transportation for your whole childhood, basically, right? So I played hockey where all over rural Manitoba, basically. I didn't play in any of the city leagues because I played in a rural town. So we went to all kinds of different other small towns and played their small town team. And I think I just think generally you would go to a small town and think there's not much to do there, but you kind of have to be creative in order to have some fun in a rural town or a smaller town. And that's what I did. So,
yeah. And a lot of times I think, you know, also the reason I thought we'd both talk about this is because also grew up outside of a small town. So not even in the town itself, but near St. Mary's, and would very much fit into that, 6,000 people, small town category. One of the things that it says here is the lack of a community bond if you live in a larger city. So yeah. Living in a larger city, lack of that community bond, more so in a smaller town. I think anyone who's lived in a small town, even, you know, the smaller you get into a mid-sized town, you feel that community bond. That's why, you know, the first thing that came to mind when I heard that is the strategy given by the city of Kitchener and the city of Waterloo as well to really foster neighborhoods and greater neighborhood intensification goes to that exactly. If you have a bond with your neighborhood or with your town, it does create a happier life.
And the bond that we had in our small town was hockey.
Yeah.
I mean, every parent in that community had someone in one of their kids in hockey. And if they didn't, then it was baseball during the summer. We had all kinds of different baseball fields that we could play at throughout the municipalities that I grew up in. And, if you weren't at the rink, you were probably doing something else that involved some sort of sport, because that was just the thing to do in the town that I grew up in. So,
yeah, you know, and one of the things I certainly noticed as well that might contribute to this, and this is one of the theories, this isn't in this study at all, is just how much people need quiet. And the ambient noise, one of the first things I noticed when, you know, moving to a city, moving to the big city from the middle of nowhere, was like there's always ambient noise happening around. I think a little bit of that noise and the constant kind of motion just kind of raises some subconscious level of stress in you. If there's always something happening. And then anytime I go home, you know, the last thing I do before kind of driving those last, you know, couple kilometers is turn the radio off, and just it's just so quiet. And I think just having, you know, that peacefulness, even though you might not be necessarily aware of it, just not having those peripheral stresses around you all the time really makes a difference in, you know, having a clearer mind.
And I used to always sleep with the window open in the town that I grew up in. And yeah. All you would hear was the crickets at night. And that was basically all the noise that you had. Now sleeping at night with the window open, you hear all sorts of vehicles and stuff like that too. So, yeah. I mean, I don't live on a particularly busy road, but you still hear some of the noise that's happening across the street. And especially if you're up a few levels, which I am, you hear all sorts of things. So,
yeah, no, it's true. But having said that, I have no intentions right now at this point in my life to move to a small town or to a rural area. I very much left that and might at this time, you know, go quite crazy if I were to move back. So I'm very happy now living in a city, but there I can certainly appreciate what this study found. And
I miss the small town life. I can't like I would go back to it any day.
I miss it. Yeah. I do parts of it, but right now I definitely need to be in a city, but you know, that's kind of the way life goes.
Small town living is the best living.
I don't disagree, but just maybe, you know, maybe that's another thing. Maybe in a couple of years, it might be one of those things you go back to, but right now I kind of feel the need to be surrounded by a little bit more, which I think that's why KW, the region itself, fits into that gap. So that molds so nicely that it is, you know, a city, a real city, but certainly with the luxuries of some of the small town things. James, thanks so much for joining me.
You're welcome.
All right, we got the Mike Farwell Show coming up just in a couple minutes. Mike back at the helm of the seat. I had a great time here with you so far this week. I'm going to be here with you next week, and I can't wait to get that started.